If I described our business, it would be sort of turnkey electrical solutions, fleet charging solutions. So everything, getting into involved in the planning, road mapping, how you can electrify, design, construction, operations, maintenance, procuring everything. We're probably one of the biggest buyers of electrical, like DC fast chargers.
Welcome to The Flux Capacitor, a podcast about the future of electricity. I'm Francis Bradley of Electricity Canada. This is number 102, episode 102 of The Flux Capacitor. I've talked in the past on this pod that I wanted to bring you, the listener, into the conversations that are taking place in the sector, on coffee breaks, at industry conferences, on the margins of regulatory hearings, or over drinks following a parliamentary committee appearance. This episode is simply a continuation of a conversation that started at the 2024 Electric Mobility Canada Conference in Halifax this past September. My guest on the podcast today is...
My name is Keegan Tully, and I'm the president and CEO of Power On Energy Solutions, and we're a wholly owned subsidiary of Ontario Power Generation.
I have had quite a few guests on the pod to talk about the electrification of transportation, including Plug and Drive, Toyota, Volkswagen, and Electric Mobility Canada. But the conversations tended to focus on the electrification of passenger vehicles. But in September, my chat with Keegan was all about fleet electrification and public transit. So here's the continuation of that conversation. We talk about some of the regulatory, legislative, and cost challenges of fleet electrification, how supply chains continue to slow projects, the scope and scale of some projects, and workforce talent attraction and retention. We close the conversation with his book recommendation for a book I've been hearing a lot about. Here is my conversation with Keegan, recorded in early November 2024. Keegan, welcome to the podcast. We chatted about this maybe 2 months ago. I think we were at an electric mobility conference, and I believe you were accepting an award when we chatted.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So I appreciate you making the time to come on the podcast to talk a little bit about I guess we'll talk a little bit about mobility issues and what's happening in this space. But why don't we start off with a little bit about Power On, just for the listener who may not know the company? Can you give us a bit of the background in terms of where the company came from and where you're taking it?
Yeah, for sure. So Power On is really we're a subsidiary of Ontario Power Generation. And Ontario Power Generation, large clean electricity producer. And a number of years ago, we started looking at our fleet saying, hey, we're a clean electricity producer. Why are we consuming fossil fuels in our fleet of vehicles? We should be using electricity. This is, 2017, 2018, sort of in that timeline. Yeah. And electric vehicles are just coming onto the market. And so, we started looking at it. It was hard, right? It was hard to find help and to find vehicles that worked and on the right, use cases. And so at the time we had some pretty visionary leaders and, they sort of said, okay, well, we can do more than our own fleet. If we're having problems and we're relying on our skill set as, electrical project managers and things like that, maybe other people need help. And so that's when I sort of got involved and started thinking about, business opportunities around electrification. And that's really the genesis of Power On. We realized there was an opportunity. And so we spun it out of the parent company to really focus on helping other vehicle fleets convert from internal combustion engines to electric.
Yeah. So how long ago or was the company kind of stood up as a separate entity from OPG?
Yeah, it was 2021 that we eventually spun it out and turned it into its own entity.
Right. So I guess that the first question would be, how's it going? After it began as an internal OPG project, and you turned to offer those services to other companies, what's the market looking like, and how's the business coming along?
It's going well, I would say. We were, a few people when we started out. We're over 50 employees now,
Wow.
so
Okay.
we've grown pretty rapidly in those few years. And so it's quite good. We're operating across Canada with projects. Beyond, we do a lot of business in transit,
Okay.
big complex charging projects, but we also do a lot of private sector fleets as well. And so, I would say the business is going good, and I have high hopes for the prospects going forward.
Yeah, and those sound like they'd be probably pretty different in terms of the business when you're talking about fleets for private sector companies versus transit. I mean, those are very different use cases. They're different vehicles, they're different fleets. I imagine they're different the different sorts of services and infrastructure that you need to be looking at for those different use cases.
Yes, sometimes. So, I think more than you'd think, the electrically they're the same, right? It's transformers,
Right.
switchgear,
Yep. Yeah.
it's charging infrastructure, and the vehicle that's on the other side doesn't matter as much. It's more about duty cycle. How does the vehicle operate? But really,
Okay.
a transit fleet that is heavy duty Class 8 vehicles is actually pretty similar charging to a Class 8 truck. If
Okay.
they're
Yep.
operating on a similar sort of duty cycle, the charging might look quite similar. I think the big difference you see is the policy environment around transit is more favorable. Municipalities tend to be quite green in their outlook and ambitious on converting to electric. And so there's a lot of activity in Canada on transit,
Right.
where on the private sector, Class 8 trucks and big heavy trucks that where the charging would be similar to transit, it's still pretty expensive. And so there's people dipping the toes in, but it's not going quite as fast. And so you see a lot of lighter vehicles being electrified, and that's where you would see sort of differences in the charging.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so that the, yeah, those lighter vehicles would be individually would be smaller. And
Yeah.
a smaller potential load onto the system.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. What are the sorts of challenges are you seeing for, I mean, in addition to cost, what are some of the other challenges that you're seeing in this space? For example, maybe let's start with regulatory. Does the regulatory environment within which we're operating, is it conducive? Is it an enabler? Or is it more of a barrier so far?
Yeah, I think if we think about the sort of electrical industry and electrical regulatory environment,
Yeah.
I think, that's where a lot of your listeners are probably familiar.
Yeah.
There's a big sort of tsunami coming here, and regulators and utilities need to be aware, because I think when you go to connect a big electric vehicle charging project, you're taking a small sort of commercial load. Maybe it's 250 MVA or 500 MVA, and you're turning it into a multi-megawatt sort of load. That takes a lot of collaboration between the utility and the customer. And we're at the tip of the iceberg. You have some transit agencies that are doing this type of thing, not many others. And so, how do we make it a really seamless and efficient process to drive cost out of the equation is a challenge for utilities. And then I think the regulators roped into that as well, right? They need to set up the utilities to make this efficient and allow the utilities to do what they need to do to invest in their systems to accommodate this, because really it's just transit agencies. But when you start getting those Class 8 trucks and others down the line, like, how will the utilities accommodate this if it's already quite challenging right now from a sort of timing and cost perspective and
Yeah.
uncertainty? What happens when there's hundreds of customers trying to do this all at the same time. And so I think it's kind of the canary in the coal mine where we have, as an industry, to get a little bit more efficient and make everybody aware of what the steps are that are going to be required to really streamline the process of connecting these new loads.
Right. And among those, the steps that we need to take to make this work better, are there, things that we need to be thinking about doing from a legislative process, for example, or, or do we have whatever enabling legislation we're going to need already in place, and it's just a matter of kind of getting on with it?
Yeah, I think the cost is a challenge. You most definitely see businesses electrifying in jurisdictions that have a more favorable policy environment, so where there's
Okay.
incentives.
Right.
Quebec, British Columbia definitely get their more of their fair share of fleet electrified fleet vehicles.
Right.
If a national chain is thinking about electrifying, they're probably going to look where they can get some extra money, and so that helps. I think policy certainty would be very nice. As a business, you can kind of get this cooling and chilling as policies come in and out, and people waiting for incentives if they think they're going to come back, and certainty around clean fuel regulation, carbon pricing, all of that would make it a more stable business. Ultimately, it's not just on governments. I think as an industry, the vehicles need to get cheaper. We need to find cheaper charging solutions to really accelerate this. Business is not going to do it just for the green merits. It needs to, make financial sense as well. And so there's definitely a role for everybody to play, and incentives can't last forever, for sure.
Right. Hey, Keegan, one of the things I ask everybody who comes on the podcast is about their journey. I think the listeners interested to kind of get a sense of what people's journey was to the role that they now have. So, interested to get a sense of what your journey was. I always make the joke when you were a kid on the playground, was this what you dreamed of doing? Or, what was that pathway from the kid on the playground to running power on now?
Yeah, I can't say I predicted that I would end up here by any means, but and I have a pretty different, I feel like there's lots of engineers and accountants and things like that. I have a Bachelor of Arts. I started my career as an economist working in the Ontario government, and I had the opportunity to work at the Ministry of Energy here and really fell in love with the electricity industry very early in my career. And so spent the first part of my career working there on a variety of different electricity markets, renewables, commercial deals, all sorts of different things. Worked in the Deputy Minister's office and really got to see how decisions are made across the electricity industry. And after that, moved to OPG, working in sort of different financial and strategy roles where I fell into this EV stuff. So before I did this, I led Ivy Charging Network as a public charging joint venture between OPG and Hydro One. And so that was my first dip into the EV space, and then moved over to spin out PowerOn. So that's sort of how I got there, but never, from starting my career as an economist did I think that I would end up here one day.
That is a bit of an interesting pathway. So what is the picture look like from a supply chain standpoint? Because I mean, I mean, maybe so I understand, your company really isn't, you're not really going out and procuring stuff. You're providing the advice, the consultation, the engineering, I guess, maybe in some instances, but you're not actually going out and procuring stuff, are you?
No, we would do all of that. So if I described our business, it would be sort of turnkey electrical solutions, fleet charging solutions. So everything, getting into involved in the planning, road
Yep.
mapping, how you can electrify, design, construction, operations, maintenance, procuring everything. We're probably one of the biggest buyers of electrical, like DC fast chargers, and
Right.
I would guess in North America from our transit business. And so we do really do all of that. Yeah, I think the supply chain is a challenge. We're buying a lot of switchgear, transformers, electric vehicle charging thing, and it's really that the transformers and the switchgear that are the biggest challenge. We're competing with that data centers. They're buying the same type of equipment. Obviously, there's a huge boom in that industry, and so we have to get in line. And it's not, always understood, I think, by the end user. They're used to procuring internal combustion engine vehicles. Once they get that vehicle, they can run it, and that's often the focus. But the reality of the electrical side, you need to do some design work before you can order any of that equipment, then order it. It's got, often a year plus lead time. And then once it gets there, you have to actually install it. And so there's a construction element too. And so the timeline on the infrastructure side is often much longer than the vehicle side, and that's not really well known by the fleets out there. And so you get a lot of really challenging sort of projects where you have to try to accelerate and bring in the charging infrastructure. And so infrastructure and supply chains are a real challenge for the industry as well.
And then you'll be working with the local utilities as well. And how does that relationship work? What kind of relationships do you need to build and how is it going?
Yeah, it's super critical. That would be the other major long lead piece. The utility has a lot of work to do on their end as well, and we're often getting into customer-owned substations because we're large customers here, and so a lot of planning and impacts on the local system. We're often doing distributed energy resources, so that needs the utility's buy-in as well, and so.
So when you say you're doing distributed energy resources, part of it sort of integrated into the projects that you're rolling out?
Yes, yeah. So we will do gas generators as backup. These are critical infrastructure that transit agencies need to operate through grid outages. And so you're putting in backup, often gas. We will do battery storage sometimes to sort of extend what we can get out of a existing utility connection. Things like that, manage cost, really depending on the jurisdiction within Canada that you're in, there's different sort of plays. And so the utility is critical. And, I think it's building strong relationships, having them understand what you're trying to do, and trying to get as much certainty on timelines. These are big construction projects, and so you really need to know that energization date, and working to get the power there sort of when you need it at a reasonable cost. And thinking about reliability, since it's so critical, how does the utility design the system incoming to your site to make sure, are there multiple feeders, things like that, to really increase the reliability of what you're deploying?
Maybe for the listener, an example when you're talking about, some of these are large projects. Give us maybe a sense of scope and scale of one of the larger projects. How big a project is it in sort of, general numbers that people would be able to get their head around?
Yeah, I would say, like, in general, a transit garage, maybe 50% electrified is something like 6 to 8 megawatts of peak demand, 100%. So you're getting into 12, 14, like there's different sizes of garages. No one's really going to 100% electric yet. It kind of goes in waves. You have internal combustion engine vehicles that you're going to use to end of life, and so, but that's the magnitude we're talking. So very, very large, and they're going from maybe 500 kilowatts of peak demand, something like that, prior to electrification.
Right. Yeah. Into multiple megawatts. Wow. So what's the future going to look like for this space? And what does the future look like for power on? If you were going to project ahead, 2035, 2050, we're all going to be fully electrified in terms of our transportation, and power on will be, where in that value chain. And
I'm definitely bullish on the sector. I think the beauty of electric vehicles is they're much cheaper to operate, and so there's a business case. If we can get the capital cost of the vehicles and the charging down, there is a business case where this actually can save money in the
Right.
long term. And so it's not just about being green, but with investment and competition, as costs fall, I think it will eventually make business sense to just do it. And so that makes me really bullish on the industry in the long term. I think heavy vehicles like transit buses can be electrified now. So class eight trucks and things like that on shorter routes can definitely be electrified. And so I see lots of growth potential for power on. We're already operating across Canada. Can we be a Canadian champion? I would love to do that and help the United States with that. So I think the industry is a great industry to be in. I would encourage young people to be getting involved because I think it's going up, and there's going to be, there'll be ups and downs. I think the policy environment's going to change. We see that, within provinces and federally as governments change, they'll be different incentives, but generally the trajectory is going to be upward, and more adoption of EVs, costs falling on the vehicle side, and that it making more and more business sense to electrify in the
Right.
future.
Yeah, well, like so many sectors as they electrify, it's just a lot of upside, no matter how you look at it. You mentioned something though a moment ago, because we talked earlier a little bit about supply chains and how supply chains are challenging. You mentioned this is a great sector to work in. What about talent and getting talent and retaining talent? Because I hear that from a lot of people in the sector broadly, that it's challenging to be able to get talent. We're competing with everybody for people. So what's been your approach to getting talent into the company?
Yeah, and I think for us, we're doing a lot of first of a kind, these really big electrification, and so it's hard to find people that have done it before, really.
But
And
that must also
so,
be an incentive, though, right? You're giving people an opportunity to
yes,
do something that
for
hasn't
sure.
been done before. That doesn't mean it's
Yeah,
easy.
it doesn't mean it's easy, and but it is a I think it's a great recruiting tool. It's interesting work. It's first of a kind. You're contributing to a better climate future. And so that is really attractive to a lot of people. We find people from adjacent industries, solar, battery storage, where, a lot of the electrical work can be similar, but we're going to need more and more people. And so definitely, electrical engineers and other engineers, we're going to need tons of that. Trades, electricians, and other trades. If we're going to actually do this, we're going to need a lot more people going into those fields. And what I see right now is there's just way too few women in the field. At least 80% of job applicants to power on are male, and so, we need more women getting educated in that field, and because I think to have the transition roll out successfully, we're going to need the people and people from all different backgrounds and groups.
Hey, one of the things that I also ask folks who come onto the podcast is I always ask for a book recommendation. And I always find it interesting to get a sense of what it is people are reading. And then we assemble all of those book recommendations into something we call the Flux Capacitor Book Club. So, Keegan, What book would you add to our reading list? What book should we add to our list on the book club?
So, I said that I started my career as an economist, and I still like economics, and the power industry is a great place to see sort of raw economics unfold in electricity markets. But my book would be Thinking Fast and Slow by Daniel Kahneman. It's been out for a while, but I like behavioral economics. I think it's a super fascinating and interesting field that sort of turned a little bit of traditional economics on its head. And we're in the customer business at PowerOn, right? We serve customers and end users. And I think some of the biases and things that customers have in their mind as they're making decisions are really critical to think about as we go through energy transition, risk aversion, loss aversion. These sort of concepts that are in the book around prospect theory are important to think about. If the fleet goes to convert to electric and the power isn't there all of a sudden, that concept of loss is really outweighs a lot of the financial benefits and other things, and it just makes people more hesitant to convert. And so I think those ideas are interesting, and it's a great, fascinating book to think about how people make decisions and think about these types of things and major business or individual decisions.
This is the second time in 5 days that somebody has recommended that book to me, in a completely different context. Last weekend, somebody had recommended that book to me, so I think it's really interesting that that you brought it up as well. So there, I mean, there must be something to it that it is. I mean, it's been out for a number of years now, and it's still clearly top of mind for a lot of people. And I think the person who recommended it to me a number of days ago was not an economist,
Yes, there you
so
go.
so so it's not an economics thing. So is there something in that book that makes it continue to be relevant? I mean, clearly, you're saying it is applicable when you're thinking about your customers and so on, but is there something else that kind of keeps the is there a reason why people keep recommending this book to me? I did buy it, by the way, this week, so I will read it, and we can chat about it at some time. But yeah, is there
Yeah,
something that's keeping it on top of mind for folks?
I think it's, at its, base, it's how do people think and make decisions, and what's the psychology sort of people? We're not always rational as the traditional economists might think, and we evaluate things differently. Sometimes we're just using biases and to make quick decisions often. And not really thinking through the consequences. And so I think that stands the test of time, really, and continues it to be relevant. And I think it popularized this sort of behavioral economics field, and why it's probably still top of mind for some people.
Okay, cool. And then just one last question. I'd be interested, given that you're in the mobility space, I mean, it tends to be kind of fleet and transit mobility. In the morning, how do you get to work? What is your mode of transport?
It's a good question. I'm a bike rider, actually. I
Oh.
most frequently would ride my bike when the weather's all right. I'm not a an all weather kind of person. It would be probably bike, electric subway,
Okay, so it's
and
subway
then
when it's not the bike, so it's electric already.
yeah, and then my EV as a last choice if I'm going to out to a site or
Okay.
something like that. But I'm
What's the
in the city, so
yeah.
yeah.
What's the EV that you'd be using?
I have a Ford Mustang Mach-E
Oh, okay. Okay.
crossover SUV
Yeah,
that would never go back.
I'm a Volkswagen ID.4 driver, and I'm like you. I wouldn't go back either. Yeah, but bike would be your first choice, it sounds like.
Yes, definitely. As long as it's
Okay.
not too far.
Yeah. Keegan, I really appreciate you taking the time to jump on the podcast and continue the conversation that we started on the margins of that electric mobility conference in Halifax 2 months ago. So thanks for coming on the podcast and look forward to chatting with you again in the future.
No problem. I really appreciate it, and thanks for having me, Francis.
For those that have been with the podcast since the beginning, and those that have joined along the way, thanks for listening. I hope that what you've been able to glean from these conversations has been new insights and greater understanding of the complexity and challenges of ensuring that electricity continues to be delivered reliably and affordably to Canadian homes and businesses in this time of great change. Tune in for future episodes. Please take the time to rate the podcast on whatever platform you use to listen, and let me know what you think of the flux capacitor. You can find me through our website at electricity.ca, on LinkedIn, and on Instagram as The Brad Bradley. The website for this pod is thefluxcapacitor.ca, and it includes links for this episode on the show page, this being episode 102. And while you're there, check out the book club page, which provides info on and links to the books which have been recommended by guests on the Flux Capacitor, including Keegan's recommendation, Thinking Fast and Slow by Daniel Kahneman. And let's continue the electricity conversation on our Facebook page, on Instagram, and at electricity.ca.